Welcome back to Finding the Edge podcast. I'm Garrett Boyum, joined with Robert Fry.
And today we have on two wonderful guests and two former guests of the podcast, Chad Longworth and Bill Miller. And we today talk about especially what it is in ecological dynamics, you know, how the role of a coach. And we talk a lot about, or what this conversation stemmed from, was a tweet by Chad talking about of being like a farmer in coaching, you know, tending to your crops and things along those lines. So this will be a very good conversation, then piping in Bill with it to talk about how he kind of tends to his athletes, kind of from a facility perspective.
Yeah. And as you can tell, we follow Chad's stuff quite a bit. But that being said, I felt like today's topic really fits an ecological lens. And what is the role of a coach? And so we're super excited to have both Bill, because I was having a conversation with Bill, and a lot of what he was talking about in terms of how he sees what he does as a coach being very dependent upon the, you know, the work that the athlete puts in. Like it's a co-adaptive relationship between the coach and the player, and there needs to be some level of reciprocal effort put in order for the athlete to truly become the best that they can. And so I thought this idea and this concept of being a farmer really played well with that, you know, both Bill and Chad would be able to contribute to having a good discussion, which we did. So anyways, enjoy today's podcast.
So to me, the thing that I wanted to cover today was, Chad, your tweet from a while ago on being a farmer. And I think that ties in really well with like an ecological approach and the whole idea of being a facilitator. I know, Bill, we were talking more recently and you were saying some sort of sentiments that echoed that as far as, you know, how much is it on the coach to develop a player, and how much is it the player's job to develop as a player? I feel like that's kind of a little bit of a theme that you were describing when we were talking. So I kind of wanted to throw that out to you guys and kind of hear what your thoughts are on what it means to be a coach, I guess, I think is a better starting question.
So I guess I could start because I do have a good thought on this. So after we recorded our last podcast, I was talking to somebody about like just some of the stuff that we had spoke about. And the one thing that like we had both agreed on was how important it was to just shut up sometimes as a coach. And he had given me a link to like, a video of a guy named Trevor Moad. I think he died a couple of years ago, rest in peace, but he was big on like, you know, mental strength for players. Like he worked with like Russell Wilson and stuff like that, a lot of different teams. But the one thing that he had talked about was how like there was like a lasting impact that like when you say something negative, it stuck so much more with people. And he had different like research things that he cited about that and how when it was like said out loud, like the probability of something bad happening as a result was much higher than if you simply said nothing at all. And obviously when hitters are working in the cage, if they're really doing something challenging, probably 50% of their swings, if not more, are going to have a bad result attached to them. So if you're just simply like neutral, if you don't say anything at all, or if you know, there's nothing negative said, you're probably going to help that athlete out a lot more, help them get through those tougher rounds of BP so that maybe by their last round, they're starting to hit the crap out of the ball the way that you had hoped. And those drills that you're doing that are challenging are starting to work, as opposed to, I mean, I see it all the time where it's like a dad with his kid or just like an inexperienced coach or sometimes an old school coach where they're just like, got on the kid's ass the whole time, just you know, hey, you got to throw your hands at the ball. You got to do this. You got to do that. You need to, you know, improve this. If you're all the time on the kid's ass, it's probably not going to be great for their development long term.
Yeah, I would second with that. I mean, when you think about it, like, especially at the younger age, like the Little League World Series going on right now, you know, there's at those ages, you know, if the parent or the coach is on their ass, like Bill said, it can lead to burnout and the kid will be like, I don't want to play baseball anymore. It leads to that situation where it's like, I don't want to play because it's not one, it's not fun. And two, it's, you know, if I do anything, I'm going to be, you know, talked to about or given a lecture about it. Like here's what you need to do. So, yeah, I mean, that does bring up a great point. Cause I mean, in my experience with kind of the handling of negative emotion, like then you start, if you know, like during a game, you strike out and you're told, hey, you know, you got to do X, Y, Z. It leads to a negative emotion, which then leads to like playing scared, if you will. And then playing scared in that sense, then, you know, you're not trying to say, hey, you know, what can I do to solve this problem? Now my thought process is, what can I do to not mess up? And that becomes a whole can of worms on that end, where you're asking the question, okay, you know, how can I not mess up? How can I not mess up? And then at that point, it's, you know, you're timid. And then everything you work towards, it's, you know, leads to timidity. And we can even think about it in terms of like, you know, maybe you don't want to swing because you're like, if I swing, you know, something bad might happen. Or, you know, if I in the field, you know, a ground ball that's maybe not hit right at me, but I have to go for it, I'm not going to go as much hard because then it's be like, oh, I didn't get it because it was out of my reach. You know, that's okay. Things like that. So then, you know, then it becomes a very negative process where then you're playing scared and then you're not exuding confidence and then you're not playing to the best.
Yeah. And obviously, Chad, like you could speak because it's your tweet. It was golden. But the one other thing that really comes to mind when I think about that tweet is how there's so much about, like, in order to really develop as a hitter or anybody really in athletics, you have to put in so many days, so many reps, hundreds of thousands of reps, you know, in the cages and stuff like that. But at the same time, there's like, so it seems almost infinite how many days we can get in the cages with these guys. But then in the opposite side, it's like we're actually kind of limited because we only get maybe a couple months with them at a time before their seasons start. You know, whether it's fall season or spring season, what have you. So it's both limited and limitless. And if you can just put in as many high quality reps as you can, and almost allow that athlete to get those high quality reps more often, then they're going to make lots of improvements with those tons and tons of reps that we hope they're going to put in. But if you are constantly going backwards, constantly negative, constantly playing scared or hitting scared in the cages, et cetera, you're probably not going to make that progress even with thousands upon thousands of reps. So I guess, Chad, you could talk more about that, but that was like the other thing that really stuck out to me.
Sure. Bill, it is nice to meet you. You and I have actually, I don't think, ever spoken in person, but I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of your work. We've implemented several of the things that you guys do in your facility, in our process as well. I think the thing about this tweet, and I think the thing that a lot of coaches and I think the pressure in youth certainly is put on coaches to perform to some expectation of what coaching should be. You know, correction of mistake, everything that you guys have highlighted, correction of mistakes, errors, movement errors, technique, reinforcement of technique, whatever. I think the thing that people are going to have a hard time, coaches and parents, drawing to this tweet is they don't quite understand what building the whole athlete and player looks like. It doesn't, you know, you come to my facility and I stand and oftentimes feed a machine or beat on the computerized machine to make sure it's feeding balls correctly, or you know, setting radar guns up, fixing technology, whatever. I don't like coach a lot. Quote fingers, coach a lot. This is an audio podcast. What I've done, and you know, what you guys have done is you know, you build the environment for the athlete to grow in. And this is where this tweet originated from, obviously, is much like a farmer, you know, builds the system to where the vegetables are going to grow, and he waters them, and you know, he takes into everything that is going to help the plant grow. He just can't make the plant grow. He can't yell at it. It's not going to grow. He can't coach it to grow faster. You just got to wait, you know? And I think a lot of times with athletes, like you said, and I've had this thought driving in my car, because it seems like that's all that I do these days. I take my kids to practice every day, and then I'm back and forth. And, you know, I draw this comparison too, is you can study the technique, Beethoven's technique of piano playing, and you can study music notes, and you can look at the sheet, and you can do all these different things. But unless you get in front of a piano every day and put your keys on the fingers on the keys and play, you're never going to become that good. And Bill, like you said, if you don't get in the cage every day, we can study technique till we're blue in the face. We can talk about it. We can correct it. And I think a lot of times what people are looking for, much like a farmer would be looking for, is how do we make this plant grow faster? I put the seed in the ground. How do I make this corn tomorrow? And it's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. I think people know that, but they continue to look for that, that avenue of what's quicker, what's going to save me the time and work to put in, you know, just like the farmer. I'm living out in the middle of the country. You know, farming is something that I see often. It's people that I interact with all the time. They're patient people. They have to be, you know, they have to, oftentimes, mm-hmm. coaches, parents, players. Patience is not because quite frankly, the way the system is built at the youth level, and this is where I interact most, because I'm chasing my kids around all the time now, is, you know, the comparison to other players. Like, I want what he's got, and, you know, he's successful, and I want my kid to do that. And it's like, man, I don't know how to get you. I mean, I know what that player does. I know what that player's output is, and I know what yours is. And the only way you're going to close the gap is through time and effort, and again, nurturing the environment, like the tweet, the farmer, something that coaches maybe not exactly familiar with is building the environment around the athlete, not necessarily like pounding whatever into the athlete. That's the point.
Yeah, it makes me wonder too, like, if you plop me out in the middle of the country and you said, all right, Bill, you're going to have to be a farmer now. Like, how I would, like, absolutely suck at it, and how, like, I would be very impatient, and you know, those sorts of thoughts come to my mind. So it's kind of the same idea. Like, if you're maybe a dad that's a volunteer coach and your kid's on the team, and not saying, like, you know, you can't do that job well, but you almost have to think a little bit more deeply about it. So it's not going to be, you know, the way it is at a 9-to-5 desk job where I want this to get done. This is my deadline. It gets done on time. Development in sports isn't like that. So I do think if you are maybe a less experienced coach, you almost have to give it that extra time and give yourself a little bit of leeway in learning how to coach. Don't expect it to be perfect so much as just kind of enjoy that process. And yeah, I think if people approached it more like that, like not just that the player is developing, but me as the coach, I'm also getting better. If you approach it more like that, I think you're going to see really good results long-term.
To your point, though, about you moving to the country here and you're not familiar with farming and whatever, you could roll up on somebody's farm and see this field of corn and be like, I'm going to do that. And so you go and you plant your own corn, and it's like, God, this takes forever. When you showed up and you thought, man, I can probably do this faster. It's like, no, you can't. That's what parents think, you know. They come in and they see these players and it's like, I want that. Okay, I'm going to put my kid here next week. He's not like that. It's like, oh, well, where's my tall corn? So, yeah, it doesn't necessarily happen that way. You know, it doesn't necessarily happen that fast. It doesn't necessarily happen in the time we want it to happen. All you can do, and to the point of the tweet, and there's several points here, irrigate and fertilize, planting the best soil, water, like all of these things, all these environmental things that go into farming. It's the same thing for athletes. You know, Bill, you're one of the best guys on, you're one of the best guys on Twitter or whatever we're calling it now. I don't really care. Elon Musk app. I still like it a lot. You're one of the best guys at building like rotational capacities, you know, rotational power and strength and all these things, things that aren't even in the cage. And people would be like, well, what's that? Well, that's like fertilizer, man. Like he's pouring fertilizer on these kids. Mm-hmm. Like as soon as he puts them in the soil where they're going to grow and develop, the cage, quote fingers, the cage, what they're going to be able to do is going to be much better. You know, and I think people maybe, I don't ever try to bring, and this is a different platform so I could say it, but I don't ever try to bring like attention to like Fry or Teacher Man or any of these guys because they're doing their thing. I don't care what you're doing, whatever. It doesn't matter to me. But, you know, it's that, you know, they kind of bag on it. It's like, well, you know, whenever Fry particularly, it's like, well, you know, he doesn't even have a bat. I learned to hit with a bat. And it's like, not everything that you need to do to develop the capacity to produce power, it's going to happen with a bat, you know, just as well as not everything that you would do as a farmer growing the plant is necessarily like the plant growing. It's like water, you know, it's like, I got to put this granular fertilizer down. Like that doesn't have anything to do with the plant. It's just feeding the machine, you know, and Bill, your work is amazing in like feeding the machine. So that when you do put it in the environment that it's going to compete in, it flourishes and grows and, you know, it competes well.
Yeah. The other thing that comes to mind now that you're mentioning that, like about a lot of the rotational power stuff I do or just strength and conditioning in general, you know, people. Okay. So one of the big reasons that I like strength and conditioning is because it helps us gain bat speed and exit velocity. Those things are vastly important. And if you don't have good bat speed or good exit velocity, you won't be able to really play at those high levels like a lot of kids dream of. But the problem is if we try to gain bat speed ASAP, which is just take the bat and swing like a caveman as hard as you can, right. It's probably not going to yield very good results of becoming a hitter. So rather than just putting on like a blast sensor and telling a kid swing until your hands are about to bleed, try to actually like gain bat speed very gradually over time. So rather than like 5 miles per hour in a month, I want 5 miles per hour in like a 2 year span. That to me is much more conducive with, all right, now my swing feels the same. It's something that I can translate well to a game and, just steadily over time, I can apply it to machine training, live at bat training, and all those other things that we feel are valuable. And then, you know, so it, rather than it being something that's instant gratification, look at me, I can hit a ball 5 miles per hour harder off the tee. It's actually like, wow, I could not hit a home run over a fence 2 years ago. And today in live at bats, I hit one over a fence. Like those are the types of gains that me as a coach, and I know all of us here would love to see. But a lot of parents and people on Instagram, you know, whatever else, social media wise, a lot of times people don't get enamored by those types of gradual gains.
And right. I think too, there's. Go ahead, Chad. If you want to hop in there,
good. Keep going.
Well, I think too, like there's multiple elements to it, right? Because it's not just like okay, quick growth. Sometimes, you know, a small tweak here or there, like there's some sometimes really low hanging fruit that you can get mm-hmm. more out of the body by moving in more mechanically advantageous ways. But when it comes to just like raw output, to your point, like this is the other element of strength and conditioning is the conditioning side of it. You may be able to output high levels of force and like increase that neurologically, but does the tissue have the capacity to handle that? And you doing that at a high volume. And so that's the other element of it too, is when we do more gradual growth, the body is able to adapt to it a lot better, and you're going to stay healthier for longer when you do it that way. Because I think about it from the standpoint of throwing. Whenever a guy has a huge jump in velocity, especially top end velocity, or like the higher levels, like the upper 80s into the 90s, like your risk of injury goes up substantially when you make big jumps, because the system hasn't, the structures hasn't actually necessarily adapted yet to be able to handle that new force that you're able to output. And so that's where I also think, like, the whole reason why I want to have this conversation is this idea of, you know, coaching is like being a farmer, is you can take this idea and you can go in all sorts of different directions with it. So for me, to kind of slightly take this in a different direction, where does the, because I, for me, it's not all about just not saying stuff to the athlete. You know, I think there's a spot for that of like, okay, when we do use our words and talk to the athlete, what way do we want to think about that? And to me, part of that is removing the weeds and helping guys like understand their own thought process, how to handle failure. And so to me, that's removing weeds. And the other element of it too, is like helping even the players start to think of it like being a farmer as well, what they're doing. Because the other thing too, going back to the growth piece, is I heard this really great analogy. Like, I mean, not all the kids are going to be growing beards if they're younger, but you know, like, if you wanted to see your beard grow, if you're staring at your face, are you going to see the growth? Or is it while you're doing things later on, you come back and you're like, wow, look at how much it's grown. And so I think that's the same thing is true when it comes to, you know, like for me, like when it came to lifting, it took me years to be able to see where I noticed any growth in terms of like changes to my body. And that's why I really like this farmer idea and helping guys understand, or even coaches begin to think in this way. Because for me, a lot of times I have to remind myself that when stuff is like within a session, things aren't necessarily progressing as fast or as much as I want. I have to remember, well, especially working with college guys, I feel like I definitely have the freedom to do this. Well, what they are right now in the fall is not what they're going to be in the spring. And so just because they're not doing something exactly how I want right now doesn't mean I need to get it all bent out of shape. Or if a coach is working with them and doing the exact opposite of kind of how I would do it, it doesn't really matter right this moment, because I got to think about the long-term growth. And what if too, because this to me is like, what's also great about this tweet is that I think it helps remove the ego a little bit more when you begin to think of it from this perspective. Because to me, it's about like, okay, what does the athlete need right now? And if, you know, an old school way, or a way that I don't necessarily, this is not the way that I would interact with the athlete, but if the athlete is finding success right now, later on when, because the struggle is always going to happen at some point. So later on, then I'll be able to echo what the, like, to me, this is right, the whole idea of being like an adaptable and dexterous coach. Taking what the other coaches said, or what they've heard on the internet or whatever, and then finding a way to utilize that and like tweak that so that it's more adaptable and dexterous for that athlete, and how they can properly place that in their process for being successful on the field. And I think that's the other element of, you know, how you tend to, you could say, your crops, you know, in caring for them. It doesn't always look like necessarily taking a hoe out there and like digging big holes, but it can sometimes be like, okay, doing like small little things and kind of cleaning things up and all that sort of stuff. So anyways, that's for me is why I love this idea and this concept, because you can take it in so many different directions.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. I've been a big fan lately, especially with fall ball starting up. I've had like good conversations with a bunch of kids that are going out to their colleges this fall. And I've been telling them, okay, pick three goals that you can hit this fall while you're at school. Obviously, I'm not going to be there in the cages with them and stuff like that. But it's almost like, okay, if you let the athlete pick their own goals, like I want to hit X amount of barrels and live at bats this fall, or I want to, you know, hit X bat speed by the end of the fall or something like that. If they are able to almost police themselves and continue to strive for a goal on each day, then their practices and everything like that are going to be at least, 1% better by the end of the fall, as opposed to, because I know how it goes, especially as like an incoming freshman, you have no clue what the practices are going to be like. You have no clue what your, you know, time in the cages could be and what drills they're going to be doing. So if you just have your own goals and whatever the outside, outside factors are, you can continue to still make progress and almost like keep growing upwards. Even if the situation that you're in this fall or wherever isn't necessarily optimal, if that makes sense.
I think too, you know, you brought up like a blast sensor or something a few minutes ago. And like for a guy going off to school that you're not going to be in front of, something like a blast sensor. Cause you know, we're talking about bat speed and we're talking about X velocity. And we're talking about the physical capacities that it takes to do that. A guy that's going off to school, that's lost like that. A bat sensor on your own can be a good tool to, am I keeping up with my gains that I got with you? Am I losing? Am I going backwards? Because again, I've been a technology and data guy for many years, and I think its implementation sometimes gets misrepresented all over the place. But that information from players can drive conversations with coaches, with you, with me, with whoever. It's like, hey man, like, I don't know, my bat speed is down 3 miles an hour and now my output is not good. What are you doing? Are you sleeping? Are you eating? Are you lifting? Are you, all of these things that drive conversations. It's not necessarily about the 5 mile an hour gain that you get right out of the gate because you just decided to swing harder. It's just about the information that you can collect on your own process. That's kind of off the topic of the farmer, but I think all of these pieces can go into, we're talking about communication with players, driving communication from an objective standpoint about their performance, not necessarily because you come off less judgmental. You know, it's not as just subjective and judgmental that you aren't meeting my approval. You know, it's not about that. It's about, look, your performance output or your performance capacity is down. If your performance capacity is down, then we need to figure out why. Because if you're a player going into college like you're speaking about, your performance capacity needs to be at peak as often as it can be, you know. And if you're away from your coach, or if you're away from whoever you're comfortable with talking about these things with, that little piece of information can drive some amazing conversations. Garrett, I'm curious because Bill and I both work in different industries than you do. Players come to you in college with some dependency on the coach is the gatekeeper of knowledge, and the coach is going to give me the wisdom I need to be a player. How do you take a kid from dependency on a coach, because that's quite frankly the environment that they grow in, to kind of independent, you know, independency, freedom of their own process, you know, supportive, but certainly, you know, to get them to problem solve on their own, because all the way to college, I mean, that's kind of what they come to expect, I would imagine, in your world. You know, a lot of the guys that I work with in big schools, they get incoming freshmen who just, you know, it's like they're waiting for someone to tell them they have no problem solving or creative thinking skills for themselves.
I mean, I think though it's this, the system that they grew up in, right? Like a lot for our area, travel ball is quite big. And so a lot of the kids that we get have been in some sort of travel program. Not all of them. If we get a kid from a small town, but even too, I think some of the times they've played in some club organizations. And so since the clubs are always trying to help them get to a college program, they're usually at some level have been inundated with this idea that like a good program gives you lots of instructions. And 100%. So I think it, you know, it's kind of the water that they swim in. So like that is, I think, a, you know, why it is that a lot of guys come in expecting that. And I do think there's,
sorry to interrupt, but how often do you see the excuse of lack of instructions for the reason that I'm not successful?
I mean, maybe it depends. Like, I mean, I think that happens a little bit. I mean, you'd only find that out in an exit meeting or after a guy, like a guy leaving from another program to come to your program. You know, right. Like, I mean, I sometimes hear about that, but it depends because it's all contextual. Like if there is not a whole lot of instruction going on and there's not any, like we were talking about shaping of the environment, you know, setting up problems for the athlete to solve, then, you know, not saying anything and not giving instruction, you're not doing, you know, you're letting, again, it's like letting things grow wild, right? There, if you have the right ecology, you can get, sometimes get, like guys can really thrive in that or really, you know, develop some really good functional movement behaviors, but there's still going to be some rawness to it. Because again, this goes back to the whole farmer analogy. There's different forms of farming, right? There's your traditional farming that you see, the cornfields. But then there's also this new idea that I've been looking into a little bit too. It's called like permaculture, where you actually have the whole ecology is about regenerative farming. And so this is kind of, to me, why this analogy is so awesome is because, again, from an ecological standpoint, or like it fits with ecological psychology. Because again, the player is, because when you think about it too, from an S&C standpoint, and I'm getting off your question, Chad, I want to come back to the other, the second half of your question. Sure. But right, the human body is biological, right? And so it operates like a plant. And so when we're talking about like developing a skill or even getting stronger and seeing more output, it operates, the growth operates exactly like a plant. You don't, the growth is happening when you're not paying attention. That's where a lot of the growth happens, is in the in-between and through the working, and you don't necessarily notice it in the moment. But it's kind of like when you're traveling, right? Like you don't really feel like you're making progress, but when you look back and you all of a sudden you go, whoa, I've actually traveled quite a bit of distance. I didn't even realize it. And so that's where, to me though, like going, helping one, coaches, and two, players. But I think it's just as important to help the players because, I mean, right, we're getting to, Chad, you definitely experienced this. You get to a point where the guys that you've coached are wanting to be coaches. And that, in some way, is how things are going to actually, we're going to change culture moving forward as far as that is like the new coaches, the new crop of coaches that come in.
Is that an old joke?
Potentially, that's going to be.
Is that a year-old joke?
Which part?
The part where you said, I've definitely experienced my players wanting to be coaches.
Yes, it is. Is that a year 100%.
Old man? I turned 40, Garrett, this summer, so it's a bit raw still.
That's fair. I mean, I've been thinking about like when my kids are going to start playing baseball at an interesting level. And I'm like, man, I'm going to be old.
Yep.
Right? Like when my kids are in their teens.
Yep. Like, I coach anyways, Nick Askew. I coach Nick Askew. So just let that simmer.
Right. Well, I mean, but that's the thing is like, I've coached enough guys that have graduated from high school and then like even graduated from college. And you're like, man, I was a really young whippersnapper way back there. When who is,
Bill, how old are you?
32.
Robert, how old are you?
I am 27.
The young buck.
Oh my God. I am
veteran
by a lot. Keep going on your point though. Sorry. I just
it's my
old man vibes here.
Well, you hope as you get older, you get wiser, right?
Kyle turned 40 this year, too. Kyle and I are like a month and a half apart birthdays, Kyle Bodie. The OGs.
I think that's super interesting just to see, like, the growth of the field. I think it's, like, so the other element of this is also transporting these ideas to the players of, like, trying to change their mindset on how they see their own growth and development. And so this actually ties well into your second half of that question of like, okay, how do you interact with a player or and help them kind of understand a different way of growing? And so for me, it's about setting the environment and putting the idea or planting the seed, right, of this idea of I want you to become your own coach, essentially. Like, that's what I tell them is I'm going to give you a framework and give you, you could say, tools, and I'm going to teach you how to use these tools. And really, at the end of the day, where I want you to get to is that you're able to do a lot of this stuff on your own, and I'm only here for when the problem gets too complicated for you and you need extra perspective. And then I come in alongside you and I go, hey, let's try to solve this together. And so that to me is, so I spend a lot more time trying to, and I'll even tell, like I've said this to several players, when an opportunity comes up, we get into a conversation because we're not in full team practice yet. And so I'm trying to like set the stage early for them, setting them up for some of the activities we might do in the future of, hey, this is the goal for what it is that how I see hitting and what I would like you to see hitting as, and how to begin to, because to me, it's about, I want you to learn how to be a good hitter that understands how to make the adjustments in real time. And like, I want you to really understand the problem and have mastery over this craft. And so, or, you know, hitting. And so, I mean, I think that's even true though, for any part of the game. You don't have to, I mean, we're all hitting guys here, but what's great about this is you can transfer it to pitching, to an infielder, to an outfielder, whatever part. Like, and it's
softball pitching. I've become a softball pitching person. It's amazing because the same principles apply to your point.
Right. And I guess I'm struggling.
I don't know jack squat about ideal techniques of softball pitching, but the same ecological techniques and environmental constraints and all these things still apply. So just, it's again, it's about, you know, to your point, this is kind of expanding on your point of becoming your own coach. I think when people hear becoming your own coach, they think they need to go out and they need to follow the 10 best Twitter accounts and digest their words to them, right? They need to learn their terminology so that they can coach themselves. And it's like, it's not, coaching is not terminology. And it's not, I mean, they may have interesting perspectives and they may have interesting ideas, but coaching yourself isn't about learning more words. We're going and reading The Science of Hitting and then reading The Art of Hitting 300, Charlie Lau, and, you know, going and following we're not going to bring back up the hitting people, but it's not that, just as much as it is trying to find your own, just trying to find your own search process, really, you know, and is my environment conducive to growth that's going to go into the game. You know, it's to the point of ideal technique and softball pitching. Like, I don't know crap, but it's like, what is your attention? Where is your attention and where is your intention? You know, that's one thing that I try with young people. It's like, are you connected to the task where you're trying to accomplish? You know, in softball pitching, I'm trying to throw the ball hard. Trying to throw the ball accurately in the strike zone. Two things. We're going to build the tasks around that. That's it. We're not trying to make our left femur go 14 degrees this way. We're not trying, because we're not going to divide our attention to things that don't really matter to the task. Like, fast matters. Hitting, you know, hit back to the hitting conversation. Attention and intention. Like, what is your intention? Or am I trying to swing the bat with some speed? Am I trying to hit the ball in a particular trajectory? Am I trying to hit the ball in a particular direction? Do I even need to think about those things? You know, those are conversations that I have a lot. It's like, man, are you connected to the intention of this thing? Or are you just hacking? Like, what's going on here?
So to that point, this is a really interesting thing that happened to me. I was taking some rounds in the cages with the guys, and they're facing, we have these light flight balls that have a little bit of rise to them when you throw them really fast out the machine. It's coming in like 95 miles per hour, and I'm getting absolutely blown up. And so like about five swings in, after swinging and missing five times in a row, I'm like, what would I tell myself if I was coaching right now? And everybody else started laughing at me. But it's like, you know, it is extremely hard while you're doing the reps to also think about something. You know what I mean? Like when I'm facing this really challenging machine, or if I was in a live at bat scenario or something, like you can't really think about stuff. Maybe you can have one focus of attention. Like I'm going to drive this ball into my pull side gap or opposite field gap. If it's as simple as that, I feel like it could work. But that was like a wake up call to me, is like, you can't really think about, like you said, you can't think about 15 degrees left femur or whatever it is. Like you cannot think about stuff when the hitting really gets tough, because it's not going to work. I can promise you that. And so if there's anybody listening to this podcast that has the ability to do so without getting hurt, step in the machine that's throwing 90 plus and tell me what you think. Tell me what you feel. And you'll be absolutely shocked at how, obviously how hard hitting is, but then how hard it is to, like, you know, to what you're saying before, Garrett, about how, you know, being your own coach in the batter's box, it's really tough. And so to all the players out there that are actually doing it, like, you have my respect, because it's not easy.
But I mean, I think at the end of the,
you know, to the point. Go ahead. I was just going to make a point real quick about my son. He's 9. He's in this youth baseball world. You know, he has to deal with, because I don't coach his team. And this is to Bill's point. He's pitching the other day. We're doing live ABs in the cage. He's throwing to hitters. And he throws 3 or 4 balls, and I'm standing behind the net where he's pitching from. And I said, look, man, at this point in the game, your coach is going to be yelling at you that you need to correct some movement, get your arm up, you know, get better, whatever. Okay. It's not going to make this thing better. If you're thinking about getting my arm up now, and now I'm having to think about the task of throwing a strike 2. Now I've divided my attention, and we cannot, under any circumstance, this is me talking to my 9-year-old. You can't divide your attention to the task. While your coach is trying to help you, he's not a bad guy for trying to help you and tell you these things. You cannot divide your attention between the internal, get my arm up, and the external of throw the ball hard in that strike zone. You have to take a deep breath. You have to step back. You have to lock your eyes on that target and just move fast at it. And wherever your arm is in space, it'll be in space. And if you throw a strike, your coach will say, see, and take credit for it, and everybody will be happy. But you cannot divide your attention, whatever you do. Like, he needs to know these things when he goes out there. It's not he needs to know my words of how to get his arm up, or my, you know, I saw a tweet yesterday about strength conditioning, about two guys that were saying the same thing. And guy number two thinks he's really smart because he uses different words. And it was a post about vanity. You know, it's like the vanity of my words don't matter any more than the vanity of your words don't matter, because we can't divide the attention to the hitting point at 90 to 95 miles an hour. You don't have time. You don't have time to have these collective thoughts about what's going on. So why train? Why train that way? Why train it all that way? Like, and they would say, well, you're not coaching them. It's like, we're back to the point of building the capacities, the environment, the things for the players and the plants to grow in, so that they can have one external focus of attention and go try to be on time and apply whatever physical capacities you have to accomplish the task, to the task, to the main task, which is hit the ball hard, hopefully.
Well, I think, it's good. But part of where I'm at too is I think it's important for them to, like what you were talking about, Bill, to put yourself in their shoes. And so there's an element of, okay, they need to learn when to make an adjustment and what to be focused on and like what things work. Because I've had it where I've experienced it of, man, I wasn't thinking at all. And I'm not having success. So then it's like, okay, well, they say, well, you know, when guys hit really well, they're not thinking at all. Well, I'm not thinking at all and I'm not having success. And then you ask a player a question.
Have you watched the PGA Tour show on Netflix? Mm-mm.
What have you pulled out of that?
You haven't
not watched yet.
Okay, so Brooks Koepka in the show, like there's like a whole episode on Brooks Koepka and like the self-doubt that he has at this moment in time about he's not even sure if he can play golf anymore. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, he's had some injury. He's thinking about his swing and he just can't do all of these things. And he's just not even sure the self-doubt he has about whether he'll be able to even play professional golf anymore. And then, you know, he just goes back. And I make this point, no one's ever gotten better by thinking more about their swing. Brooks Koepka, that's a great episode to that point of, no one's ever gotten better. No one that you've never heard anyone say, you know, the more I thought about my swing during the game, the better I got. Like no one's ever said that ever in the history of baseball or in golf or any bat stick and ball sport. That's hard. You know, the more I thought about it, the better I got. And to your point, it's like the more mindless I became about it, the better I did. You know, my playing days are getting further and further away, but I always go back to, it was my first year in rookie ball. We're on the road and my parents are coming to the game. And I'm like one for my last 40 and I'm searching for anything. I've never done this bad in my life. You know, I'm a small town kid, single A high school in Virginia. I struck out like 3 times in high school in 4 years. Like I've never done bad before. But my parents were coming to the game that night, and I'll never forget that it was like that night. I was like, I've tried everything. Tonight, I'm just gonna see how little I can care, and I got like 3 hits that night. Just I'm gonna try to swing just whatever and not even think about anything, and I got 3 hits that night. My parents were like, well, what'd you do differently? I was like, nothing. I mean, I just didn't. Because it's hard when you break into pro ball to not try to like keep the gas pedal pressed to the floor and try as hard as you can, you know, because you want to become a big leaguer. You know, you've realized this step in your journey and you want to become a big leaguer. But like pressing and thinking more about it for me didn't help me and doesn't help anyone else. Back to your point.
Well, I mean, because this is where I think I'm kind of trying to describe the nuance here, because for me, I've done both of like, okay, I've thought way too much. And then on the other end, I was like, well, let's just go to not thinking. And I didn't see improvement there either. I still sucked. And so there is a level of, because this goes back to what you talked about before, Chad, intention and attention. So what are you attending to? And then what's your intention? And so, but some of it too is like, what I try to help players do is assess what is going on. Like what adjustments? So for example, I want to use that one second. So the first one is like, okay, what's going on? Am I swinging and missing under? Like what? Okay. So if I'm swinging and missing under, what kind of type of adjustment do I have to make to try to not be under the ball? Or, and so, because this is where, for example, ecological dynamics helps me understand that the system is dynamic. So, for example, it's more about what's the current state of the system and what is right for you right now based upon the current state of the system. So, for example, Chad, you've been trying a whole bunch of different things. Also, too, you're really talented, hence you're there. And so sometimes you need to let the talent naturally come out, or maybe all those things that you were trying like changed and nudged your system to put it in a really great spot to be able, when you go to not thinking at all or not caring, depending upon like what was the constraint, right? And you take that constraint off that actually affords success, then all that stuff naturally comes out. And so for me, it's about trying to help guys identify, or rather help them direct them more towards what is going to make them successful, right? So when a guy is struggling, swinging and missing, oftentimes what I'll say to them is like, hey, I just like check swing, just touch the ball. And even my college coach found like hitting off the machine like that. If I could just touch the ball one time, usually then I could ramp it up and I could hit it square just simply because I touched it. Ecological dynamics tells me, well, that's a calibration issue, right? So by touching the ball, you're becoming more calibrated. And this is why, for example, at least to me, when I watch the pros and a guy wants to go challenge a guy with a fastball and just is going to ride their fastball, and the guy fouls it off straight back, throws again, boom, single, right? To me, that's like they're fine tuning their calibration and getting more dialed in. And that's kind of the same thing of, because if you look at like the concept of calibration, well, it's just your body's mapping to where things are relative to you. And so when you can get that tighter of a one-to-one relationship of, okay, where I'm swinging is where I'm intending it to go, like that, the error between that gets minimized. So to me, that's one element of it. Like, I'm just simply trying to help guys assess like, okay, what thing do you go to? So for example, I talk a lot, and there's a whole podcast on this about the importance of exploration. Because when you begin to explore and you try different things, especially based upon the current state of the system, let's say you're more fatigued today. Okay, there are certain days where your nervous system just isn't primed, because there are certain, let's go to the opposite. Let's go to the ideal. Okay, your nervous system is super primed. You can literally do anything that day and you're squaring balls up. You can be super relaxed. You can have a little thought, distracting thought in there, and you're still hitting the ball really well. You flip that, and the things and the ways that you are operating when you're in an optimal condition just aren't working today. Man, like, I just don't feel it. It's like, well, today, maybe you actually have to grit it out. Like, you really have to will what you want to have happen just to get just some sort of positive result. But you have to be able to, this whole idea of attunement, right? You have to be attuned and in tune with your body enough to know what it needs that day. What intention do you need that day? And so that's where, to me, like this whole idea of being your own coach, like a really good farmer knows based upon the weather that day what his crops need. And again, if the crop is yourself or the players, knowing what they need that day becomes a skill in and of itself. And so you only acquire that skill through the day-to-day work. And taking every day as like, this is awesome. Today I'm fatigued. Today I didn't get enough sleep. Well, what do I have to do based upon that in order to perform at a proficient enough level to be functional and useful to the team? And so, because that, right, if your goal is to play at the professional level and get to the MLB, well, you're playing a ton. And the states of your body is going to be in over the course of a 162 game season. Like, you need to know what to go to when you experience all those different states that you're going to be in. And so that's where, in some ways, like every day there's a way to grow and learn and because the way that I look at it is like, I want the athlete to come to know themselves better. And so my job is to help them get to know themselves better. And that's where, like, so for example, this is a slight tangent. One of the issues that we thought of why we didn't do so well last year, especially in playoffs, was that we weren't mentally tough enough. And some of that mental toughness comes back to something that our head coach, when I played in college, like harped on us all the time, was you need to look in the mirror. And that's super hard to do. And dealing with some of those uncomfortable things and working through those. Because when you're struggling, that's kind of what's going on, is do you have the humility to look in the mirror and be like, man, I'm just being a bonehead right now. I should actually be trying something different, like I'm banging my head against the wall and I should have done that like three swings ago. And so that's where like a small example of like it being tough to look in the mirror and recognize like, oh, I should have made a change. I was being, and so anyways, these are the kind of like the things that you don't see. They're not the obvious things on the outside that you're seeing, but these are the small inside things that like I see part of my role as a coach is actually helping them with the mental side of the game and this process that everybody talks about, you know, like, but the process is getting into like the weeds of it a little bit more and like building that out and giving them a vision for what it actually looks like. And so I don't know, that's kind of my, because to me, when a guy is struggling, cause I've heard this a lot. And so this was the example that I was going to go use before. There's been like, we have a really talented player, like, from high school, he was a, all state, you know, player type of player. He's really good. And he's struggling. We've talked about this whole process thing. I'll ask him all the time, like, hey man, what adjustment do you think you needed to make here? Or like, what just happened? He'll say to me a ton, I don't know. Like, come on, man. Like we've been over this of like what these things are. And that's the thing. Like, when you get to that spot of like, I don't know, you need to then ask yourself a different question to begin to find answers. It's about the questions you ask. And so that's some of it too, of helping guys. And then, so the other day he was struggling in BP and he's sitting there and he's like, wants to talk. And he's like, you know what? Never mind. I was like, hey man, like, what's up? It's like, I don't know what to do. Like I'm struggling. I was like, and his last round, fortunately for me, in his last round, he had one really good hit. I was like, hey man, just do that. And he was like, okay. But what he had changed is he went to a no stride. So coach was at 30 feet, like super close, throwing BP. And I could tell that guys felt like the ball was getting on them fast and whatever, even though he wasn't throwing that hard. And for him that day, it was like no stride. I was like, hey man, how about, that's where you had success. Let's start there your next round. I don't know if you're going to have more success or not, but you wanted to try something. Like we got an indication that, you know, there's more success over there. And so that's kind of where I want to help players recognize, okay, today, what is working? And if you can pick up on that, become more attuned to that information and figure out how to utilize that. Because again, we're in a dynamic state. So it's kind of like, okay, if things are out of balance, where is that balance point? How do we move back to that? I'll use the analogy of if you see like those bubble levels, right? So if we start to, the bubble starts to move too far to the right, well, then maybe we got to start moving back to the left. And so to me, this is where it's not like, there's not this one answer. There is a answer for this moment. It's not always hit the ball to the other side. It's not always hit the ball on the ground. Those are things that you go to when other things aren't working. And it's knowing when to use all these things. And so for me, that's my goal, is to actually help them master the art of, you know, playing the game. So another example, I was talking with another player who has had a lot more smart, I guess you could say. And he challenged me because I was like, I think this is a cool thing that I've come to understand through ecological dynamics. Turns out I'm not the first one to think of it, which is no shocker at all. But anyways, so like what dictates where the ball goes on the field? And we're kind of talking about that. Because he hit the ball to center field and it went like 350, 360 or whatever, and it's an out. It's an out. Like Rapsodo had it as an out. Straight to center field. I was like, hey man, that was a well hit ball, 90 miles an hour or more. But it's an out. You know, everybody's like, you know, wants to clap him up. It's like, yeah, you know, if you were grounding out and barely hitting the ball, I would like clap you up and be like, hey man, that's good. But it's like, how, let's just think about that. It went 350, 360. If you hit that more, if you don't hit it to center field and you hit it to one of the corners, that's a home run. That's a double. You hit the ball to the biggest part of the field and you don't get enough distance and enough carry at the right launch angle and the right exit velo. Those tend to be outs, especially the higher levels you go, because the guy out there in center field is really super fast. So anyways, that's sort of the conversation of like, is like, well, how, I can't, you know, determine where it goes was like, well, let's examine that a little bit. What determines where it goes? And so we started talking about bat angle and how, like, if you can manipulate the angle of your bat a little bit at contact, you can then start to manipulate where the ball goes on the field. Maybe not exactly, but if we don't ever work on it, how do we know, right? Like, Chad, this is something that the argument that Caleb's been making for, like, you know, work on edge pitches. So anyways, it got us into a long conversation of like, you know, being your own coach. And so where I ended, because he started to grasp this idea, I was like, okay, so where we're going with all this is you need to get to a place where now you're a boxer, you're an expert boxer, and now you're thinking about strategy. You're not just thinking about, like, okay, throwing good strikes and combos or whatever, but now you're thinking about the strategy within the game, within the moment, right? Because he already picked up early in the conversation, like, well, you know, based upon this situation, this is what I do. Exactly. That's where we need to get to, is based upon the situation of the game and start playing the game. Because when you start playing the game and understanding what's going on out there, it will dictate what your intention should be for this pitch, this at bat. You know, now being able to utilize, okay, bat angle, like, okay, based upon this situation and how, what this guy is throwing, I'm going to figure out how to drive it to the other field, because that's going to score us a run. That's going to do something for us in this at bat, you know. Or, you know what, there's nobody on, there's two outs, you know, I'm going to go for it right here. Like, there's a time and place for you to just absolutely sell out and go for it. And so, like, being able to pick up on those strategies and, like, the game, like, that to me is the highest level of what it is that I'm trying to help guys get to, is like the strategy part of it. But you have to understand the nuances of like how to make adjustments. Because to me, the way that I analogize it and analogize it to him is, think about it like boxing, right? Like, there is recognizing the strategy within the game, within that, and how you make adjustments to your opponent. And that to me is what it is I'm trying to help guys get to in being their own coach.
Yeah. The one thing that comes to mind too, for me recently, I had a really cool moment where we're doing live at bats and I'm recording, like, literally 15 feet from the hitter, and we're looking at each swing, like, in real time between pitches, basically. Like, he's not looking at it, but I am. And we had been working on something. You had mentioned it before about the kid who is going to, like, a no stride. So this hitter that is I'm thinking of has more of a big stride, big leg kick, big forward move. And we've been trying to eliminate that in the cage, like in batting practice. And when we do that, everything looks really good. He hits the crap out of the ball, but when he gets in live at bats, it kind of goes away, and he goes back to more of an exaggerated forward move. And so, like, I literally caught it, and I wish I had, like, someone filming me with, like, a mic, because it would be a viral video. But it's like, hey, dude, real quick, take a look. Look at how far you lunged at that ball. Like, it was a take. And, you know, look at how much you lunged on that take. Let's fix that. And it wasn't, like, immediate, but it was, like, after about four pitches, later that at bat, he got an outside corner slider, well spotted pitch, and he took it to right field for a nice, like, 95 mile per hour single. And it's like, that's something that he couldn't do at the beginning of that bat. So it does make me think too, like, giving guys something like a real quick feedback with video or something, whether it's a cue, whatever, just, hey, like, remember this. And then let's see if they can go and figure it out. Live at bats are a great, great way to do that. If you have, like, a controlled live at bat setting, it's really, really beneficial, I think, for hitters to get something to stick. Because, you know, when it's in the cage, it's more, I guess, easy for it to stick, because it's such a controlled environment where you have no negative repercussions at all. Whereas in a live at bat scenario, obviously, you can't control where the pitch is going to go. You can't control what pitch is going to come. So to me, those types of live at bat, controlled scenarios, if you will, where you can make adjustments on the fly, is really beneficial.
There's one other thing too, like, to kind of loop back. When guys are struggling, what I'm trying to do is give them a process to not lose their wits, because I think that's the like, to not feel helpless. And that's where I think, if you have something to work towards, then you have some element of control, right? And that's where I'm trying to put it back to, like, where they don't feel like they have any that they're completely helpless and they don't have any control over the situation. And I think that's part of the element of like trying to get them to be their own coach is now all of a sudden I'm handing control back to them. And because the situation is so dynamic and, you know, in some ways very unpredictable, you need to give them something to be able to go to. And that's because, so this is the other thing that I've been kind of thinking about. I like watching martial arts videos, and there's this one on, you know, should you get involved in a fight, right? Like, you know, like a knife, like there's a knife involved, you know, if you like, because in both these scenarios, like it was interesting to see how people would respond. And what this guy was talking about is like, you respond based upon your training. So people who have had some sort of fighting background end up fighting with a guy with a knife, thinking that they can actually do something, where knives are super dangerous. Whereas, you know, people who like don't have any sort of like fighting background, they're going to run away, you know? And so it was interesting to hear like how much our training, like when under pressure, right? We fall back to the level of our training, right? And because things are happening so quick, and that made me think a lot about the military. And then also made me think about how important our training is, because when guys get in these stressful situations, they're going to default back to what they're most comfortable with and what their environment has fostered for them and allowed them to do. And because they're going to find, you know, from an ecological perspective, they're going to find the most functional way that they could interact with that in the past. And that's how they're going to interact with things in the future initially. Right. And so that's where I've been thinking a lot about that of like, okay, how can we use some of the military way of training people a little bit, not all of it, because I don't want to take some of the, like the rote stuff, but there's certain procedures that you can kind of standardize. And the way that I think about it is like giving them heuristics. There are certain heuristics, like Chad, you have some, you know, of like, you know, focus on the target and then move fast, right? Those are some heuristics that a player can always default back to, right? Under stress. And so like trying to come up with those like big picture things, you know, for example, like I've thought about like, okay, how do I start talking about adjustments to players in a way that kind of fits this, the way that I think about it. And where I came to is the test retest model. Because that to me is essentially what I'm doing. Like a player is doing is, okay, you pick something, you test it, and then you see what happens. And that's kind of your retest. Then you go back and you iterate on that. And if it works right, you let it ride. And so that's where, you know, kind of coming up with like these little, like these big picture phrases or ideas that like the idea of being a farmer, that they can take and apply it to a whole bunch of different scenarios, or it can be applied to a whole bunch of different scenarios.
I was going to make the point, Garrett, that, and to the same point that Bill made, and I've written about this on Twitter before, is another value of representative practice design and representative learning environments is not that it connects the physical skill to the challenges of the game, but it fosters the one pitch at a time mentality. Like turning the page on a bad swing or a bad at bat is a skill in and of itself, and something that we should do in practice. You know, and the closer that you can get it, Bill talks about live at bats, you know, machine 95, that one pitch at a time mentality. Like turn the page, bad swing, swing and miss, whatever, these micro failures that we have along the way. Great hitters, great players turn the page quickly. They don't dwell on it. They don't. And if the only time that you're meeting the challenge of the game is in the game, then not only are your skills not connected, but your mind and mentality is not connected either. And like you say, I'm trying to get players through this, but if your practice environment isn't representative enough, then they never practice this skill of turning the page, getting over it, getting past it, moving on to the next swing, the next pitch, whatever. You know, I've said that to our guys is if you can't handle it here off these inanimate objects flinging baseballs at you, like how are you going to handle it in the game when there's runners on first and second and one out in the fifth inning and your team is down two and you swing at a 55-foot breaking pitch in the dirt? You're going to beat yourself up in that moment because your team really needs you to be as good as you can be in that moment. And if you can't turn the page, then you're not going to be.
I think the
so that's my point about representative practice design.
I think the other side of that coin is one of the things that I'm trying to do as a coach is demystify the success that a player has. Because I think a lot of times players have no idea why they're being successful. If you have no idea why you're being successful, then you have no idea how to get back there. And so that
look at how good players walk on the internet. They don't have any idea.
Right. But
they knew they were. So they talk about what works for them. And that's going to be, to your point, I think that you're making is that's going to be unique for everybody.
It is,
and it might be wonky sometimes. I think Wade Boggs, or who ate chicken before every game? Wade Boggs or somebody. It's like, if you got to eat chicken before every game to be good, man, eat chicken before every game. Have at it.
But I think that, right, like, that's part of why I want to try to demystify it a little bit, because even that, it's like, oh, it's a superstition. It's like, no, it's a routine, and routines build comfort, right? And also there's other ideas like cognitive activation, right? Like when you do certain things, it prepares you for the next thing that you're doing because it's associated. And so like, that's what I mean by trying to demystify some of these things for people to understand like, okay, how do I do this in a way that's not just superstitious, but in a way that I am actually in control of it? Because to me, a superstition, you're not in control. The superstition is in control of you. And so that to me is like kind of where I think the role of a coach is like, we spend all this time, we're like trying to learn the truth about how things really are. And so when a player is getting jammed up and their superstition is now becoming an impediment for their performance, of actually demystifying that and giving it its proper place again, of like, no, dude, what you need is a routine. That's what you need. But you also need to understand when your routine gets broken, you need to have a routine for that, or you need to have a way to deal with that. And actually what you're looking for is maybe instead like cognitive activation of like being able to help switch your mind over and give you something that's more durable or more adaptable, that will work in all these different situations. And so like that to me is where like the upper echelon, you could say, of coaching is like those coaches who really have a, like, cause to me, that's where, like, for example, I mean, I don't know for certain, but I get the sense that like a coach, like at the professional level, like Donnie Ecker, like these guys, or even like other managers who have been really good in the past, they're really good at managing the individual and like giving the individual what they need. And so that to me is like what a coach is. It's not about, you could say, like a one size fits all type deal. It's, I don't know, to go ecological, it's like being in tune with players and understanding where their current state is and being able attuned to the specifying information that they're giving off to know what they need. And so that to me is like, it's going back to the, it's like a farmer, again, being attuned to your crops, knowing what your crops need, and what's going to produce the best yield for you that season. So we've gone for a good minute. We can keep going, but it seems like a good spot. So is there any place that you guys would like to land the plane on?
I am.
I guess for me.
Go ahead, Bill. You're good.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Chad. All right. But I would say, I guess for me, the one sticking point that I could give for listeners is, you know, when you're in the cages or, you know, whatever you're working on, it's easy to go the negative route. It's easy to say things, I don't know. I don't know how to fix this. I can't fix this. Rather than that negativity, try to just be neutral. Try to just either shut up, don't say anything, or say things like, I am going to figure this out. I'm going to get this next pitch. I can't. To me, that's the best way to go about laying the foundation of all the words that we use as coaches and as a player trying to self-talk or self-teach whatever you're doing.
Chad, you were going to jump in there?
Here.
Okay.
I got nothing else. I mean, I got nothing else. I got to get on the road. I got to do a couple things before I get on the road. We don't talk about Marvel movies or energy drinks on your podcast. So,
I mean, you can. That might be somebody's thing.
I've gone to the fountain Diet Coke. I just feel the fountain Diet Coke up in the morning. It's like a dollar. Gives me the caffeine I need, gives me the sweetness I need after the black coffee, because I love the black coffee. But other than that, that's my go-to in the morning. Used to be a white monster. It's like everything else on the planet. It's gotten so darn expensive that stop at the gas station and $5 out of here, I got a monster in my hand. It's like I can just get the fountain Diet Coke and it's a dollar and I'm good. I get the same caffeine and I'm good.
There's a hack for all those
as always, Garrett, people. I appreciate you, Bill. Yeah, it was great to meet you. Marvel, that's a whole nother podcast, okay? We not go down that
road. Hey, I mean...
Nice to meet you, Bill. Robert, always good. Thanks for having me back, man. I'm like a veteran of this podcast. I'm like the Caleb Abney of this podcast. Caleb's been on my podcast like 3 times.
I need to get him back on here.
I've got to find some time. I got to find some time to get my podcast back going, just because... But I find myself... building spinners all day, every day now, or swing speed stick and taking my kids to practice or going to, I'm always going somewhere. There's no more hours in the day.
I feel you. I guess I did want to at least wrap with this of, I hope like people's takeaway is that we want to think about growth in terms of the long term and that it takes time. I mean, I think that to me is like the biggest takeaway of this whole conversation, and start thinking about things from like a farmer's perspective. At least that's what I would try to wrap on. Robert, you got anything that you want to wrap on?
No, you basically took the words out of my mouth. It takes time. I mean, for all of our individual strengths and what we do, it took time. You know, Bill for power development, it took time. Me for coding, it took time. Chad and Garrett for ecological dynamics, it took time. It's not like, oh, you know, I'm going to start reading on ecological dynamics and then tomorrow I'll be an expert. It's going to take time to be good at something. You can't, like anything in life, you can't just pick up a guitar one day and just start, you know, playing like a Jimmy Page the very next day. So it's going to
take time. There's a whole reason why they say you got to get into the weeds, you know? And so anyways. Hope you all enjoyed today's podcast.